This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Oh my God.
No, that's weird.
And now it is.
You know what I usually... Now you... It's just...
It's going to be all quiet.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't have a story. I'm very sorry.
You know what I usually do is when there's funny shit that happens right in the beginning when we're doing like mic checks or whatever, I will play that in the beginning of the episode. That's like part of the intro music. It'll be like the funny parts and stuff that happens and then go into the episode.
That's funny.
It just...
Yeah. It's make fun. Sure we do that a lot of that now.
Yeah, it's fun. Good evening. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be another excellent episode of Within the Trenches. I was going to say the number, and I forgot that I had said there's no number there. So there we go. We're going to continue. Yeah, of course.
Editing later.
Yes. This is Within the Trenches, a podcast based on the experience of being an I-1 dispatcher. This episode is sponsored by Showalter & Company and supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. So we are here for the 2018 APCO conference, and we are recording live from my room.
That sounds weird to say. Don't say it like that.
Yeah, in the Venetian. Well, you know, the reason is because we're in a casino and there's not a lot of places. Even in the spots where the conference is at, there's people all over the place.
Good way to justify being in your room.
Of course.
That's nice.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's loud as hell.
People come up to me not knowing I'm recording.
Yeah,
right. No, that has actually happened before where I've had this little microphone out on either my iPad or my phone, and I'm recording an episode, and someone will come up and say, hey, and I'll say, no, it's all right. You know, come on in, and, you know, I'll tell whoever I'm interviewing, just hold on. It was really quick. And then, you know, of course, I edit that part out.
Right in the middle of a tragic story. And they're like, forget it.
Well, if it's, if it's been that, you know, I don't do that. That hasn't happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Go on with your serious story. Yeah,
like, hold on a minute. Sorry. Continue.
Stop your crying.
Yes. The horse was hit. And what? But, yes. No, that's... A lot of times that happens where, like in Nashville, we were sitting out in the area where they Nina had designated for the podcast zone, and they started they pack up pretty fast. Like on Wednesday, you know, Thursday's the last day, but on Wednesday they start packing up shit really quick, and the people are going by. And it's real loud. It's like, da, 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 of, like tables and stuff that they're moving. And I'm sitting there looking at the person I'm interviewing, and he's looking at me and still talking, and we're trying not to laugh.
Oh, man.
And I'll say right away, if you can hear this, I apologize because I didn't realize they were going to be packing up this soon. But then hearing it back, the levels were good enough where you could just barely hear it in the background, even though they were walking right in back of us, and it sounded loud as hell.
So you guys are screaming into the mic and people are like walking by, you know.
Yeah, well,
and I feel bad.
Yeah, and those who are listening are probably wondering why we're yelling, because they don't know what we're hearing. So I'm pretty sure that that episode specifically, the next one, I said, you know, I apologize if we were loud. I said, but you couldn't hear what we hear, because in the headphones, we've got our headphones turned up, so it's a lot louder to us than it would be to anybody else.
Poor listeners are going, what is going on with him? He's crazy today.
Like, this guy. Our ears are bleeding now.
Screeching.
So, when did you guys get here?
We got here Friday afternoon.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We drove in. Yeah. We left the house and drove in. So
drove straight here?
Yeah, 6.5 hours to get here. Right through the desert, which is lovely. 110, 120 degrees, whatever it was out there. Hot.
Hot.
You know, I have to say this because we were laughing so much already. I think I said all of this stuff and I didn't even introduce you guys.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, I'm Bill Johnson now.
So. Yeah, that's right.
I'm Toby Maxwell. Hello.
That is a good one. Well done. Chip Whitney.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right. homage to Conan O'Brien there. That's right. Was always his thing, Chip Whitley. Man. So my guest today for this episode, now that we've gone through and we were laughing and everything else, are Doug and Jill Showalter of Showalter and Company. Woo-hoo. Welcome. Woo-hoo.
Yeah,
exciting. You got it right.
I did. I know. Well, I had to say it slow because my tongue was being kind of stupid and wanted to say other things.
At least you got it right because nobody else can. So the DMV constantly spells it incorrectly. So
really,
you got it right. Yay.
How would they spell it?
They spell it show later. And I'm like, there's no L there's right two there. W's. Two W's.
I was going to say, I'm looking at your shirt and I don't know how they would.
Oh, man.
It's the DMV.
It's, you know, it is what it is. It's a state agency, but I work for a state agency too, so.
Very nice. Very nice. So you guys drove in 6.5 hours for this conference, and you guys, I'm going to say right off the bat, you guys had something really cool happen. And I don't remember if you posted it before the conference started or I'm pretty sure it was a couple days before, but you were in one of the booths for the expo hall.
We're so lucky that we're friends with Mark Lee and Nathan Lee and Ryan. We're friends with those folks from Denise Amber Lee Foundation.
Yeah.
That they invited us to come in their booth for a couple of hours and hang out and give out stuff and just enjoy the fact that they're drawing a lot of people and we draw a lot of people. So we had a great time with them. We've known them for so long, mm-hmm. and it's so nice to have folks that support us. And Mark is, and Nathan, all of them are so supportive of us that they're saying, hey, you don't have a booth? Come and join our booth for a couple hours and tell everybody what you do. And they were so great. We're so thankful to them. Mark was actually...
I think he was probably more excited than we were.
Yeah, yeah. He was so great to just talk about our... People would come by and ask about Denise Amber Lee, and he's like, well, you know what? Showalter and Company's here, too. And I'm like, man, that is so great.
That
he's
is
so
very
supportive
cool.
to have that. So
you guys had thankful. A lot of traffic around there and all?
A lot.
We did. We had a lot of people coming up saying, hey, we saw your class yesterday, and it was so great. And then we were able to send them over to Denise Amber Lee and say, hey, they do training as well. So
yeah, very we had cool. like a whole block down there of us and them and some other folks. And the training was great because... we just did two big classes and had a lot of people show up, which was great. And then they started filtering by the booth because we told them, hey, come by and check us out and talk to us and we'll get to meet you. And we took a lot of pictures and things. So
nice.
You'll see it up on Facebook. We have a lot of things up there. So
very cool. Yeah. I had seen that announcement that you guys had put out and I thought, oh, man, what's going on? This is really cool. Very cool.
He's asked us to do a couple of other things with him. So it's really nice that we get that chance mm-hmm. to go out and spread our message as well as their great message. It's nice to kind of have that. So
right.
They didn't get to teach any classes at this conference this year, which is unfortunate. We did, and really shocked when they told us what room we were in initially to teach a class. We went in the room the day before just to take a look at it and check the equipment, stuff like that. And the room was humongous. It's so massive.
Yeah.
And then I'm telling Jill, hey, we're probably only going to draw like 10 or 15 people, so don't take any pictures. So that day of the event, we filled the room, and I could not believe it. I was so shocked to see that many people coming. And when we finished, they all came up and were talking to us and giving us their cards and asking for more information. It was so shocking to have that happen. It happened on both days we taught. I was just blown away with the amount of folks that were coming by and giving us such good kudos for what we do.
I know what he does is good, and I love his classes, and I never get tired of watching him, mm-hmm. but it's always good to hear other people coming up that we don't know.
Right.
Saying, oh my God, we love your classes. We see you on Facebook. We follow you on Instagram. You guys are doing such wonderful things, and we know who these people are, but it's so nice that they come up and introduce themselves, and they say how great he does and how great we're doing. So.
It's nice well when they done. Come up and talk about the Facebook, because we have about 11,000 people on there, and it's yeah. nice when they come up and say, oh, we're following you all the time, and I'm like, I don't know who you are, but thank you. Thank
yeah,
you
for following yeah, of course.
Introducing themselves and saying, hey, we love what you do. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
So I know it's great, but it's great to hear from other people.
That's nice. Amazing. That's yeah. Nice and I saw the picture that you guys posted on, I think it was Instagram, of the room
yeah.
being full. And then, you know, you had the Showalter and Company on there, you know, branded. And I thought, that is amazing. Yeah.
That was a picture Jill took. So,
hey, well done. It was good.
Photography
during
classes.
Very nice.
I was a bit surprised to see how many people showed. It was humbling at best. I mean, to see that actually come in and have people mm-hmm. stay for the whole thing and watch people participating. Yeah. We did some exercises with the class and the entire class got up and was participating with it. It was just great.
You know, dispatchers are a hard audience.
Yeah.
It can go one of two ways. They either right. sit there and look at you like, okay, what do you got next? Or they're really involved, and they got really involved. They're raising their hand, laughing, interacting, and he gets everybody up to say thank you to your fellow dispatchers, and everybody gets up. They all, there's a video of it on Facebook.
Oh, nice.
They sit there and share it.
They
sit there and chatter with each other for, I guess, wait, like 2 minutes maybe? A
couple minutes, yeah.
But everybody was involved and they loved it. So it's always great to see that.
That is very cool. I think more and more now, within the last couple of years, you know, dispatchers are really starting to, you know, participate in classes. They want to learn more. They want to learn more, whether it's to help their performance in their job or just for themselves, you know, for health and wellness and such. Yeah. And they're participating, which is really good, because when I was dispatching, you know, there was, and maybe still now there's kind of that stigma where, you know, if you're asking for help, you're weak,
yeah,
you know, but it's changing. It's been changing the last couple of years, and people don't give a shit about that anymore. And they're really wanting to learn.
I'm so happy that people are getting into that, because yeah, I've been in the business a long time, and I've dealt with a lot of important, terrible, tragic things. And before, it used to be, don't show that because you're weak. And now, when I feel this stuff come up, when I'm telling a story or relating an event or whatever it might be, that I can feel the emotion come up, and I'm like, that's normal, because I'm a person, and I have feelings, and I have emotions.
You're human.
It's okay. Yeah. And it's weird. When I was in your class, and people were sharing emotion-driven stories, and I'm like, you can feel a lot of people in the room feeling that, oh my gosh, we've all gone through this.
Right.
Why are we not all talking about it if we've all gone through it? So it's a nice feeling to see people actually be human and say, man, this is affecting me. This is not good. So
right, exactly.
It's nice.
So you guys had a full boat on Sunday. I had a full boat as well. And then yesterday, on Monday, you know what's funny is that I didn't realize we were going to be in the same room.
I didn't either. So we went up and we saw all training, and I was like, oh, Ricardo's right after us. We don't even have to leave the room.
Yeah, just sit down.
I showed up there like maybe 10 to 5 minutes before, you know, your class was going to end, or the class, because like I said, I didn't know it was you at first. And the door was shut, so I didn't know that there was a class going on there still. I thought it was already out because there was people waiting outside. I was like, oh, well, I'll just go in and set up. Well, I open the door and I see you standing up there talking. It's like, F. And shut the door because somebody turned around and looked at me. I was like, sorry.
Yeah.
Step back slowly.
Slowly sneak out of the room.
Yeah.
The girl that introduced you, she came up to him initially when we first got there and said, okay, you're Ricardo Martinez, and we're like, no. She's like, what? She goes running back. She's like, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I felt bad because all the people that introduced us, all of them told us, we don't like public speaking. We don't like to talk in front of people. And I'm like, well, then thank you for being selected to introduce us. That's great.
I had a second thing I had to say at the beginning of each class.
So I tried to help him out. I was standing next to the one we did in the big class. And I'm standing next to her going, this is easy, man. Come on. Talking in front of people is super easy. This is a great crowd because they like us. So it's nice. We're all friends here. This is great. So she was really, she kind of relaxed. She even said afterward that she was happy that we were so like nice to her, and
that's
said,
awesome.
Hey, you know what? It's okay to be nervous in front of people.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like in one of the sessions that I had, there was a girl telling a story, and she looked at me a couple times and she said, I don't like public speaking.
Yeah.
And her friend who was sitting next to her just kind of like patted her on her leg and then her shoulder. And she goes, you can do this. You can do this. And then she went through it. And when she was done and she gave me the microphone, she goes, and felt like you could tell that the story that she told, she felt like a weight lifted. And it was awesome. And it was really good to have you both in there as well with me.
It's nice to hear those stories. I mean, because we all have them and we're all like, I don't want to say it because people may look at me and think, well, I've had a better story than that.
Right.
You know, and it's, but you say to yourself, gosh, I mean, people are willing to say it. I mean, during your class, I did not raise my hand because I'm not a big, I can feel those emotions nowadays. And I'm like, man, I don't want to, it's one of those things where I'm sort of old school. I'm sort of like, come on, Doug, you shouldn't feel like that. You should be okay. And it's like, really, it's okay. You see everybody in the room doing it. And I'm like, man, if I tell a story, it's like, it's going to get me going. And I'm like, I really need to kind of, hold on for that. So, right. But it's nice. It's really nice to hear people tell those stories. And I tell it sometimes in classes. And I know when I'm telling the stories of officers I've known that have been murdered and things, that I can feel the emotions building up in me, that I think to myself, gosh, I really need to address this issue. This is something that's
right.
That's inside me that needs to come out and talk about it.
Well, I think for a long time we weren't, I guess, in a way, allowed to feel.
Yeah.
You know, you just keep going, and it's okay to feel. And that's what's changing, and that's what's really good. You know, this is kind of a good segue in talking about your story, actually, to see where you come from, the both of you. And then, you know, go into the company, the training company, and everything that you guys do. So I had put you in the notes for as first,
yeah.
Doug, but to be a gentleman, to be a gentleman, ladies first.
There you go.
So,
Jill, regale us with your stories.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, how did you get into public safety to begin with?
Well, I initially went to school to be a paralegal,
uh-huh.
and I spent probably 2.5 years being a paralegal, and a friend of mine worked for our local police department at the 911 center, and she's like, you need to come work with me. You're going to love it. And I'm like, you know, I just got out of college. Let me do this paralegal thing for a while.
Uh-huh.
And I decided, you know, I'm going to put in for it. I'm going to put my application in. I submitted my application in October, and then in January they started doing the whole you want to come work with us background thing. And I wasn't hired till that May. And I got in there. I didn't do a sit-along. I didn't know what dispatch did at all.
Oh, shit. Like, so you went.
You were welcome. Anything.
Yeah. So, welcome to hell.
I was like, let's just do it. So my first or second day in training, they took us down to the dispatch center.
Uh-huh.
And we walked around. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, hell, what did I just get into?
Right.
So, I just moved into my apartment. I was living by myself. So, I'm like, this needs to work. I can't go back to being a paralegal. So, that's how I got into it. It was just, I basically jumped in feet first.
Dang. So, wow. Okay, so you're walking around and you're looking at things and you're feeling the way you said, what I get into,
yeah.
But what is it that you're seeing that made you feel like that? Was there multiple screens?
Was it 500 screens?
It seems like that, right?
And it's these screens that have all these letters across them and you have no idea. Like you have, it's all these screens and you're just looking at them like, what does all this mean? It's so
right.
much information. I think at that time, I don't even remember, it was maybe three or four screens. I don't remember, but I'm just looking. I'm like, I don't know.
And what year is this?
This was back in 2004.
Okay.
So I did that for, I was there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember thinking, I'm just going to just power through it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I credit my career with starting on midnights. I started on midnights.
God.
What?
Graveyards.
How dare you? I love midnights.
I hate graveyards.
My entire career was on midnights. Except
awesome.
For like a couple weeks. But I credit with that. I was able to take the calls. They were the higher priority calls, obviously, when you work midnights. But I was able to take the calls, take my time a little bit more. And then after the calls, we were able to discuss them.
Oh,
and we were
there
able
you
to
go.
Talk about them. It wasn't just like back to back to back.
Right.
So you're at the end of 8 hours finding out what you did wrong. So basically at the end of a call, you could like go back and talk about it. So I credit that a lot. I'm like, I don't know if I'd have made it if I had to start on day work. I don't know.
Yeah, so all of your training was on nights as well then, or did you have any days?
It was 2 weeks in classroom training, and mm-hmm. then the majority of my training was on midnights, and then right before they were ready to release me, I had to go do we were a funky shift, so it was 7 to 3
mm-hmm.
for 6 days, and then 3 days off, and went back to 3 to 11 for 3 days, and then after that, I could go back to midnights if I wanted.
God, that's terrible.
I know. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Man.
I loved it. I was like, you have to pull me off of here kicking and screaming.
Dang.
It's
kind of like, not exactly like it, but when I first started out dispatching, we had 3 different shifts. So then it was every 2 weeks we changed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and
gosh.
that was bad. So it was like 6A to 2P, then 2P to 10P, and then 10P to 6A.
And you had to work them all?
Yeah, every 2 weeks it switched.
Well,
but the midnight shift was like 4 weeks, I think, is what it was.
Oh. Our shifts were the 7 to 3 day work and the 3 to 11 nights rotated. So you'd work 6 days of days, off 3 days, come back to 3 days to nights, off 3 days, go back to 3 days to 6 days of three. No. 6 days.
Oh my God, that sounds horrible. Jesus.
So basically days and nights.
Right. I hope they wrote it down so you could read it.
It's been 5 years since I've been there.
Oh, man.
But midnights was steady midnights.
Okay.
Oh.
I loved midnights. I was on midnights for the whole time as well until the last part of my dispatch career, because when I was dispatching in Florida, that's what it was. It kept switching and switching and switching. Oh, but man. When I finished it off back home in Michigan, it was all midnights except for one stint where I was on days. Because I got promoted.
You say it so bad. It's like,
well, I got promoted to supervisor, which was awesome. But the one shift that was left, because I was low man, was that day shift. And I said, "You serious?" I said, "I'm getting off of midnights, and then the following week I'm going straight to days, which would be 4:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon."
Oh, wow!
And I lived about 45 minutes away from dispatch. Man. So, yeah, so I'm having to go to sleep at like 8, and then wake up at 3 in the morning to leave by 3:30 to make it to work. Oh. By like 4:15, 4:20.
What a great day.
Yeah. Yeah. To relieve the night supervisor. And I remember, I'll never forget this. I remember the first night I went to go crash out. It was 8 p.m. and it's summertime. So, I mean, it's light out,
yeah.
You know, and I go to lay down and my wife lays down next to me and she goes, "Why the hell am I going to sleep? I'm not going to sleep. I don't have to get up early in the morning." I said, "I don't know either."
I'm confused. Yeah,
you just came in and stuff. And she goes, "I have no idea. I'm going to go watch something." I was like, "All right, cool."
Oh, yeah. That's what's working those weird shifts like that and changing all the time. Yeah. Oh, that sounds horrible.
I couldn't do it. We worked 6 on 3 off. So that was the schedule.
Oh, wow. God.
Which I loved. Because you would take 12 days of vacation and get 3 weeks off.
Those kind of schedules like that make you say, "Why are dispatchers acting crazy?" That's why. They're all so confused about what day it is or what time it is.
Yeah. I didn't know anything else. That's all we ever worked.
Wow. Right.
It was 8 hours. And then if you worked overtime, it was 12 hours.
Oh, so, man. See, yeah, we worked 12 hours all the time. Well, it was 3 12s and a 4-hour shift. And so that was kind of weird, but we had every other weekend off.
Wow,
so
that's nice.
Yeah, so that was a good thing. But yeah, those 3 12s would easily turn into a 16-hour shift if somebody called in.
Yeah.
Everybody knew if somebody called in, don't answer the phone.
That's right.
If you answer that's the right. phone, you can get forced in, and if you're at that high of the list, you're screwed.
Well, that was the hard part about midnights. They would call you in the middle of sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I had to call people that when we had that same issue when I was a supervisor, and so I would call people at early in the, I mean, like 4 o'clock in the morning. "Hey, can you come in today?" And people knew I was calling at that point, and they kind of caught on. So they would say, "Yeah, Doug, I can't come in. I've been drinking." I'm like, "It's 4:30 in the morning," and they're like, "I know. It's just sad. I'm not going to come in." I'm like, "Dang!" It's people did not want to come in on overtime, so they would constantly say, "I can't make it in. I don't feel well." It's like,
so you answer the phone. Basically, it's
Then they had their kids answer the phone and say, "Who's this? Why? Is this Doug? Yeah, my mom can't come to work." Dang.
You know, there was one time that my wife answered the phone and I looked at her. I was like, no. And she goes, "What?" And then she goes, "Oh."
Yeah, said, "They want to talk to you."
Damn it. So she had to give me the phone and the supervisor, because I wasn't a supervisor at that time. But she goes, "So you're pretty high on the list, so I'm probably going to call you back." And I said, all right. And I get off the phone and she goes, "I'm so sorry." I was like, "It's all right." I said, "But whatever we had planned for today screwed now." Yeah. Because I'm going to have to go in. And sure enough, they called. But I ended up only having to work like 2.5 hours because someone wanted to split it. So, yeah.
But damn, you live that far away and you're going to go in for 2.5 hours? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So I paid for the gas.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about it.
The one thing about my agency was if it was your days off, they couldn't force you in. So
really? Wow.
What?
Yeah.
They that's not anywhere I've worked.
The way we had it, yeah.
So they can call you and get you.
You're like always on call.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The 4 hours before your shift or the 4 hours after. But if it wasn't connected to either side of your shift,
wow,
you couldn't really be forced for the overtime.
That'd be tough, man. Wow.
If there was...
But we also had like 60, 70 dispatchers and...
Oh.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Okay.
18, 20 on a shift.
So that was going to be my next question.
I have pretty large agents. So I work for Anne Arundel County Police, which is just south of Baltimore, Maryland.
Ah.
And it was, at the time, it was over 650 sworn officers.
Jeez. What?
Yeah. And it was probably, I think we had like 67 dispatchers, I think. I don't remember the numbers now.
Holy crap.
It was around that. So it took...
We had 20 dispatchers for the county.
It usually took a minimum of 12 to run a shift.
We had three to run a shift.
Dang.
So we had like a minimum.
I have anxiety just listening to you talk about it.
I always thought we were a smaller agency, and then...
Shit.
Yeah, it's like, whoa.
When I started traveling the country, I realized that, holy shit, we were one of the big ones.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
This is not some small little affair.
No.
This is like a big deal. So,
well, it was Anne Arundel County, so that...
Yeah, they're not bad. Well,
just south of Baltimore.
Wow, so. That's pretty crazy then.
Wow.
So... What was the longest shift you ever worked then?
12 hours.
It was 12?
It was 12.
Dang, okay. Man, whatever.
Well, 13 with the time changes, but...
Oh, nice. The time changes. You really did not.
We just want to add that in there. Just want to add that. All right.
Yeah, that does not...
I think
no.
It was contracted. I think it was part of our contract.
Wow, yeah. That's crazy.
Because we couldn't work more than 12 hours in a given period of time.
Well, holy cow.
So my longest shift was an 18-hour shift.
Wow.
But the good thing about that... and those who are listening, they've probably heard me say this many times already, but it was Christmas Eve, so it was double time and a half.
Oh, well, we then that's, that. You know, hey, we yeah. didn't have that, but that sounds great.
Yeah, it was good pay for, yeah. And then I got home, and it was 5 a.m, and my wife and I, we get the kids up, have Christmas breakfast, then I go to sleep because I have to go right back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the rough ones. The holidays were rough. But again, working on midnights, I got to enjoy most holidays with my family. Oy. So it made it nice. And that's part of the reason I stayed on midnights, because holidays were a big deal to my family. So I could still be tired as shit.
Right.
I could still participate Christmas Eve, Easter, brunch, Thanksgiving, dinner,
right,
whatever.
Exactly.
So,
and the calls were probably a lot better on midnights as well. You, sir, liking days.
But I've been on Graveyard, and I'm telling you what, that song, The Freaks Come Out at Night, is true.
It is true, especially in the full moon.
Yeah.
I worked in L.A., so I know the freaks do come out at night.
And
so,
like, the winter weather was always really bad at night.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Like, the roads would ice over. You'd have idiots who were like, well, I just thought I'd come out and take a look. Meanwhile, there's like this big old truck up on a...
Exactly. I was just going to say, the majority of it is there people in big old trucks.
Truck, you're invincible. You're not invincible. You, no matter what size car you have, you're not invincible.
Right.
Just driving in that weather.
Biggest pet peeve.
Oh, God. You know, that gives me anxiety thinking about it.
Yeah. I remember going into work once, and it was like blizzard weather. And I'm going down this state road, and I can barely see in front of me.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm driving slow, and I'm thinking, God, help me make it to work, because you know, I'm one of the good guys. I'm going to help. Yeah. I'm going to help people, yeah. So please help me make it. And then I pass by this big-ass snowplow that's tipped on its side.
Oh, jeez.
On the side. And I'm thinking, if he can't make it, yeah, how am I going to make it? Yeah. And I did. I made it. I made it there, it home. But I thought, that guy, because he's standing on the truck, and he was either talking into a radio or on his phone. But, yeah, the thing was tipped over on
the
side.
He was actually trying to wave you down, and you said, no, I'm not stopping.
Like, come in later.
Peace out.
Deuces. I'm out.
February of 2010, we had a blizzard come through that lasted for quite a few. We had, like, snowdrifts that were, like, 10 feet high.
Ugh, Snowmageddon.
The weather got really bad. They'd actually call in the National Guard, and then the officers would come pick us up in the vehicles, and the National Guard would go pick up people who were further out.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
This
is why I worked in L.A.
Cool.
We didn't have that stuff.
The thing is, if you're getting picked up, you might end up 2 hours before your shift. having to sit there. Or to get a ride home, it might be 2 hours after. But it's one of those, do you want to drive your car?
At least you got to meet some nice National Guard folks and hang out.
I never got the National Guard because I live too close. Like, they just sent an officer to my house to pick me up.
Oh, you're like, oh.
Yeah, darn it.
I'm going to get all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
Apparently, they'd send the Humvees out, and whoever was in the Humvees would freeze their ass off the whole time because they weren't ready.
Oh, nice. So
they never sent, like, snowmobiles or anything for you?
Not for me personally. I don't. I think it was just mostly the Humvees, or they had the the bigger. What are they? The Suburbans, Chevys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
the bigger cars.
Good
Explorers,
Lord.
Jeez.
No, that's too much.
It's been 5 years, so.
So, do you remember your first call?
No, I don't.
Any early calls?
The one that I think is my make or break call was when I answered the phone and I looked at the Annie screen and I recognized the last name of being one of our officers.
Oh, man.
And the wife on the phone is screaming, he's got a gun.
Oh,
and
geez.
Then she confirmed that it was her husband who was one of our officers. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but.
Right, of course.
That was, I consider that my make or break call because I could have gone either way that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I got off the phone. It felt like I was on the phone for an eternity. Like, you're on the phone listening to her screaming and trying to get her out of the house, but she's not leaving because she's got the kids back and forth and back and forth. And you're like, what do I do? Like, I was just out drinking with this officer not too long ago.
Yeah.
So after they finally get out there, I leave. I, like, put my shit down, turned, signed off the computer, walked out. I was gone for probably, like, 2 hours just crying. I'm, like, sitting in the snow. It's February. I'm sitting in the snow just crying and crying and crying. And so my supervisor comes out, and he's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, let me go back in. Because I just felt like if I didn't go back in, that it'd probably be done.
Yeah, I've wow. heard people say yeah. that. Yeah,
I was afraid I'd be afraid to do it again. So I'm like, let me go back in there. So I was in there for probably about an hour, and then the officers that were out at the scene came in, and they were talking about it. So there goes Jill again outside the room.
Oh, man.
And then I was like, because he asked me initially, do you just want to go home? And I was like, no, you know what? I'm going to go back out. And then after the officer came in, I'm like, I got to go home.
Yeah.
I was at home, and then he called me the next day and was like, hey, how are you doing? Do you want to take the night off? I was like, no, I got to come in. So I went in, and I was fine after that. But
awesome.
Thankfully, I never received another call like that. But, yeah, you know, it's the make or break call. It was
right.
probably just, I was there less than 2 years when I got that call. So, and you figure you can handle something like that. You can handle so many other things.
Right.
So I feel like, because I had such great support that I was able to feel like I could.
That's good to have that, you know, that support. Because sometimes, you know, in other agencies,
you don't have
stuff that I've heard. Yeah, they don't have it there. They don't send you to a debriefing. They leave dispatch out or something like that. And then, or like in my case, a few other dispatchers and I, we had an incident that happened, and we went to go talk to somebody. And after we say what happened, you know, the first thing that's asked is, "How does it make you feel?" Like, all right, see you later.
Have a good day.
I cried for like 2 hours. I just couldn't stop crying. I'm just like, how does this happen? Like, you know these people.
Right.
And it's easy to answer a 911 call when you don't know the people on the other end. It's hard to answer it when you know the other people. And to this day, I don't think he knows it was me on the phone. And I prefer to keep it that way.
I hope
he never finds out it was me. But it's just, it's hard.
It is. The county that I worked for, the last PSAP I was at, is the county that I grew up in. Allegan County.
Man.
I grew up in that county. So everyone on the west side, pretty much, I knew a lot of those people. I went to school with them, or I grew up knowing them as friends of the family and stuff. And I had taken calls from family members. And like when my grandmother passed away, I took that call.
Oh, man.
So that one was a crazy thing, too, where I mean, it was she was in hospice care. So we were. It was expected. We knew if she was getting close, but I was on backup phones and I had been texting with my mom and my sisters back and forth. And, you know, they said, you know, we can tell she's getting close, you know, her breaths are further and further apart. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking in my head, just please let this be a fast night. You know, give me all the calls that you can give me so that I can just keep my mind off of my grandmother. And because she lived with us our entire lives.
Oh,
she was there since like the beginning. And so then we had already had it worked out where if she passed away while on shift, I could leave. And my coworker who was sitting on main phone, she got up to go to the break room. And as soon as the door shut, the phone rang.
Oh, jeez.
And I remember it feeling different because I never hesitated to pick up the line.
Yeah.
And that time it felt different. Like the hair in the back of my neck was standing up, and I waited so that the information would pop up on the screen. And wow. It was my mom's cell phone. And I just sat there a minute, and then I picked it up. Elegant 911, it's an emergency. And my cousin Brenda says, Richie? And I say, yeah. And she goes, Grandma just passed away. It's like,
oh, my God. Fuck. Jeez.
So I went through the whole thing, and my supervisor said, you know, to go ahead and go, and I took off. I was like, dang, man, what are the odds that I would get that phone call? It was just
– I've heard these things before. I'm so lucky. I've never had anything like that, but I've heard these situations before. People have told me in classes that they've taken calls from their families having a heart attack or whatever. I just can't imagine the emotion that's flying when that's happening. I mean, and you got to hold on – to deal with that kind of stuff. And that's extremely out of control rough. Wow.
Yeah. No, that's it's nuts.
I can't imagine. Because you can be prepared for something like that to happen. But when it happens, then you're like, gosh, I don't know if I'm ready. It's like, I mean, that's a terrible – I can't imagine taking that kind of call. It's unbelievable.
It was nuts. You know, I got out there with my family and stuff, and there were officers out there. They'd actually called me on my way over there, and they said there's nobody on that side of the county right now because we're over here with your family.
Oh,
and they said, so we're just letting you know, don't drive stupid, but
get over here.
Yeah, get over here. And I said, thanks, man. I appreciate that. So I got over there and stuff. And yeah, so that was one of the hard things is working in an area where you know people. You know, you've got that line where when you're speaking to somebody, do you say who you are or do you keep it to yourself?
Yeah.
And there were a couple times where I said who I was. And one call specifically, it was one of my aunts. And there was somebody who was actually checking on a house, and she didn't know who the person was. So she was afraid that somebody was breaking in. But we had information that that there was people watching that house. You know, they called in for them being on vacation or whatever. So we had the information.
Oh, yeah.
So she was afraid, and I'm trying to tell her, and I said, Tia, which is, you know, aunt in Spanish. I said, Tia, it's Richie, it's me. And she goes, ay, mijo, oh. You know, she's like, oh, thank you so much. So but it could have gone either way.
Sure.
You know? It could have been, oh, you know, shit. You know, it's, you know, if you tell somebody that who you are, they might not want to say anything at all or be embarrassed. And then when you see them the next time, you know their business.
And
so it was always hard.
Well, I've had people tell me in classes that they've taken calls of a family member having some situation, and they did not tell them it's me. They said the call finished, they got done, they left, went back home, but they said they just couldn't do that connection because if you did that connection, all hell going to break loose. I mean, it's hard to hold on.
Yeah.
If you say it's me, and now it's a personal thing.
Right.
So a lot of people said they just couldn't tell them it's me. I'm so glad I've never had that kind of call.
No, I always kept it because I was born and raised in the same county, and I worked in the same county. So obviously calls came up where I knew the callers, and I never said – I sound like a three-year-old on the phone anyway. So.
Is your mommy there?
I probably sound like I'm three. But,
very nice.
So I never told anybody when I answered the phone, unless they could tell it was me. But it's that disconnect.
Right.
I don't want you to know I know this. If you're going to tell me about it later, that's fine.
Yeah,
that happened a couple times where I had to sit there and act like I didn't know what was going on. But, you know, it was part of the job.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
And luckily for me, too, is that a lot of the people on that side, they knew me growing up as Rich. So when they would say, what's your name? And I would say Ricardo, because that's my real name.
Yeah.
That's the name my parents gave me. So I'd say, this is Ricardo. Oh, thank you so much. And this and that. And like,
they don't get it.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know, you know, they wouldn't know that it was me because they knew
me at least
you
didn't change it to like, hi, I'm Brenda. And they're like, oh my. Brenda, you sound terrible.
I've been smoking a lot.
Yeah. Marlboro Reds.
Some Luckies. Yeah.
That's right.
Filter. Oh, man.
So, wow.
Doug.
Yes. Hi, everybody.
Yeah. So how did you get into public safety?
You know, it's really it's that same thing because I was a private investigator for 10 years. My dad did it for 30 years.
Really?
And so I kind of took over his business at that time and did it. And when he did it back in the early 60s and 70s, you could do a lot as a private investigator. When I took it, the rules were changing. Very a lot of privacy issues and things like that, but we still were doing a lot of stuff. And so one of my ex-in-laws was LAPD, Rampart, mm-hmm. an officer. And we would go hang out with them, and they'd be talking about how great LAPD is. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And he goes, you should come and apply. You should be like a dispatcher over there. We have these openings and everything, and he'd be great at it. And I'm like, eh. So I did. I applied at LAPD because I had such freedom as a private investigator.
Right.
I mean, I could do whatever I wanted to do. Of course, this is back when we had no cell phones. So I had a pager. So it was like, so sitting in a car on watching somebody's house for hours was boring beyond belief. But so I went and applied, and I was in the hiring process with LAPD, and I applied at CHP at the same exact time. And I got the call from LAPD that you're hired. And I'm like, great. And then I get a call from CHP saying you're hired.
Oh, no.
And so I'm like, I'm right in the middle of which one do I go to? And all my friends said, Doug, take CHP because you can go anywhere in the state. You can go anywhere. LAPD is going to be downtown. You can go anywhere you want. So I went to CHP, and I spent the first 10 years of my career at L.A. So really went all over the state. But that was a good experience because L.A. is so busy, and so many things are happening. You get exposed to so many issues. I mean, Rodney King, when that all happened, I was there. The Northridge earthquake, when that occurred, I was there. So O.J. Simpson, when that occurred, I was there. So you get to see these things firsthand happening right in front of you and thinking, oh, my gosh, this is crazy. I mean,
man.
I know, right? I got to watch OJ on TV.
I know. I was like,
I remember watching.
Yeah, we didn't watch it on TV. Yeah. I was in the room when it was happening. I was so happy because the day that OJ decided to escort him back to his house in Rockingham, I was working the East LA radio. And the East LA radio, all the sergeants on that radio were monitoring this thing going on. And they're like, is it coming this way? Is it coming this way? And I'm like, nope, nope. And it's not coming this way at all. He's way over on the 405. Don't worry about it. But I had everybody wanting to get involved in this thing. But I was lucky to be on a radio that was not. But I got to watch the entire room because the room at LA, we had 12 radios, two backups, lots of other positions. There's like probably 40 people working at a time. And I got to see it happened right in front of me.
Oh, man.
I mean, there was lots of, you know, lots of emotions were high, and a lot of people were calling 911 to scream at us about let OJ go and all these things. And it's like, you know, it's a crime. I mean, hello.
Right.
He's kind of a wanted person at this point. And to just see these things happen and learn from these lessons. Northridge, when the earthquake happened, you know, a lot of people couldn't handle the stress of having that. And you could see it in people, you know, people yelling and everything. Same thing with Rodney King. When that all the riots started, our office was on Vermont at the 101 freeway in a very dangerous part of town. And
jeez,
they took off the signs on the front of the building, and we had National Guard ringing our building. They're all around it. We still had fires everywhere, people running across the freeway. Driving into L.A. when it's happening was shocking because you got to see the place on fire. Everything was on fire, and it was like, we're driving into this thing. And we're going to work right in the middle of it. So I was lucky because during Rodney King's situation, when the riots were happening, we kind of knew the verdicts probably 12 hours before the public did. So we were kind of staging and kind of getting things ready to go and stuff. And I remember working one of the tactical radios, and we had probably 60 or 70 units on each tactical radio. And I had the units that were – their call signs started with an atom.
Uh-huh.
So I had A1 through like 60. And the whole time, the only thing I can remember back from this whole thing happening was I kept thinking, I hope that Adam 12 says something. But that guy never said a word. So. But it was just, it's fun to see those big events like that happen right in front of you. You're sitting in the room watching it happen. And it's amazing to see that kind of stuff. I mean, to see and be part of it.
Holy shit. So while you're being part of it, I'm like Jill. sitting on the couch with my dad, and we're just mesmerized by all of this going on.
He was yelling at me to get off the TV. He didn't even want me watching it on TV. So I'm like, I want to watch it. This is interesting.
Right.
Okay, look, I just revealed my age. Just so I am older than all of you. So, but here's the funny thing about being my age.
That's funny.
My lieutenant, who is not my lieutenant at the moment, but he just transferred and promoted. But we were talking one day in the office, and I said, oh, yeah, I was on Real Stories of the Highway Patrol, and they did an episode of me because I did this pursuit for 5 hours of this darn bus from San Diego to L.A.
Yeah.
So he goes, what year was that? And I said, okay, look, I'm older. I'm like, it was in 93. I did this bus pursuit. He goes, Doug, I think I was on a big wheel at that time. I'm like, he goes, but I do remember sitting in front of the TV watching Real Stories thinking, I'm going to be that guy's boss one day.
Nice.
So I said, that's just wrong because I've been around a long time. I mean, I'm in my 27th year with the Highway Patrol. And
yeah.
And I've had the opportunity to work all over the state. I mean, I've worked in like 10 of our comm centers, and I was in charge of the state training program for a while up in Sacramento. So I've had a lot of experience with this stuff. That's why the training is so important to me, because I've had all these experiences and I've seen what works and I've seen what doesn't work.
Man.
So, I mean, and that's the thing when I tell someone, like we were at Idaho and I was telling the story of Rodney King, I think it was. And I said the first trial that happened with the LAPD officers, and when the verdict came out, it was chaos. So I'm telling about what we did at that time. And we're on a break, and some guy comes up and says, dude, you might want to, you know, make your stories a little more current, because a lot of my people weren't even born then. I'm like, damn.
Google it.
Yeah. So I tell a lot of stories about Barney now. And, you know, I'm
like, nice. Well done. Way to balance it out.
That's why Sesame Street
has more class. That's right.
To make it relatable.
That's but funny. When you've been on as long as I have, you kind of had the opportunity to see all these cool things happen. And,
yeah,
and
I tell her, those are amazing stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, those are amazing stories.
It is
stories.
Cool to be part of history. And
right.
That's one of our biggest things out there I talk about in classes, is leaving that legacy of where you came from and what you've had. And I've had a lot of cool stuff happen, and some terrible things happen too, but mm-hmm. I've had some really cool things happen. That the bus pursuit that was 5 hours, this guy stole a Greyhound from San Diego and drove it up, and people were chasing him forever. I mean, that was a really cool thing to have. 5 hour pursuit is not common.
So. No, it's not. And that is probably one of the things that I really like too. Like, I'm gonna ask you both this really quick. And for the general public to hear this, it's kind of weird. And I always have to say that because I know that's probably the way they're thinking. But in dispatch, what was your favorite incident type to take?
Pursuits, because we chase so many people. My agency loves to chase people. And just sitting there on the radio and doing a lot of mundane things and putting out calls, and suddenly you hear somebody's siren go, and you're like, here we go.
Yeah.
Say, here it is. And it's a pretty cool feeling to feel that and think, all right, now I'm right with these folks. And
right.
And you can hear the whole thing. And you know, this is way before TVs were in our comm center. We didn't have any TVs in the comm center. So we had to just listen to our units. Where are they? What are they doing? And think ahead of them. Get units set up way up in advance of those folks. And that's the coolest thing about being in CHP dispatch, mm-hmm. is I think the pursuits were so fun because they're so fast and they're right. going so quickly. You know, when somebody's at 120 racing down the street, that's a lot. I mean, we have to really, you know, have a lot of things set up in advance when they spike strip them or pit them or do whatever they have to do to stop these cars. I will tell you a funny pursuit story real quickly. So I'm at my office now. I work in San Luis Obispo, and it's a pretty slow office. We don't have a lot of stuff going on. but I'm there, and we had a new dispatcher on the floor, and we have a pursuit going. The guy that's being chased calls 911 and gets her. And he's telling her, why are these cops chasing me and stuff? And she is like, oh, my gosh, what do I tell this guy? So she runs into my office and says, Doug, the guy in the pursuit is on my phone. I'm going to transfer him to you. And I'm like, okay. So she transfers me to the guy, and I'm like, sir, what's going on? And he's like, why are you people chasing me? And what's going on? How do I stop this? And I said, why don't you just pull over? And he goes, do you think I should? And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, I will then. And so he pulls over, and he's like, what do I do? And I'm like, okay, sir, listen, the officers are going to come up and talk to you, but you need to throw your keys out the window, put your hands up, don't do anything quickly or anything like that. So, and he's like, what do you think they're going to do? And I said, we just want to help you. We want to figure out what's going on with you.
Yeah.
So as I'm on the phone with him and he's got his hands up, you hear the officers come up on the car and they're saying a lot of really like, get the fuck out of the car. And I just spent 10 minutes telling the guy, they just want to help you, sir.
Yeah, you're going to be all right, guy. You'll be all right. Oh, man.
I just found that tape the other day, too. And I'm like, listen to this guy. He is so crazy. So, yeah,
that is good ones. That's awesome. I like that.
I think my favorite were the, it wasn't necessarily a type of call. It was putting the puzzle pieces together from multiple calls.
Ah.
So, because where I lived was a huge county of like over 500,000 people. Mm-hmm. I mean, four districts. And the one night we had in our southern district, there was nothing ever went on down there. And we had a report of a house fire. Mm-hmm. And we had a report of a pedestrian struck right in the same area. And I'm like, what in the hell? So we're all trying to figure out what's going on. And I jokingly was like, hey, what if it was like a meth lab that exploded and people are running out? Well, that's what it ended up being.
Oh, man.
We found out later. But it was always those calls because we know that people who call 911 always like to tell the truth the first time.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Always, you're lying is bad.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So you're like trying to pull the information out of these people and you're trying to put it together with like, okay, this is really weird. And we got this weird situation over there. Are they connected? And so it was always playing detective, trying to figure out what's really going on. What are they really trying to say? Okay, where are they calling from? What are they trying to say? What do we have going on right now?
So this explains why Jill loves Dateline.
I love Dateline.
Yeah, Dateline. Yeah. 48 hours, 2020.
Yeah.
But yeah,
there's ID channel.
They make the midnights go by faster when you're sitting there trying to put together puzzles.
Right,
pieces.
Of course.
Yeah. Or like something like random would happen, and we're all going through priors at locations trying to figure out, okay, was it here, was it there, what happened here, what happened there. So it was a cool time. It was always fun to try to put those puzzles
I pieces. Always
or make
enjoy
up stories of like
well.
What happened before or what happened after.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're creating all these scenarios just to see, you know, wow, what if it was this or yeah, how about this or this?
As a dispatcher, I was a call taker, so I could talk to my caller on the phone, listen to the other call takers around me and the dispatcher. I was listening to all three at the same time as I'm taking one call because I'm like, what if it's related to this? Especially when all the lines started going off on one side. You're like, okay,
yeah.
Something's happening.
I call that dispatch ear.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, yep. So I could listen to dispatch the call going out by the dispatcher and the other call takers around me. So you're sitting there trying to listen to the caller, trying to listen to everybody else. And okay, well, I got this person, you got that person. Or okay, how are
and
you
if,
connected?
If they're typing really fast and hard on the keyboard, you know it's a high
something's
priority.
Something's up, yeah.
Fingers of fury.
Somebody send the call so I could put the notes in. So why are you holding the call there? I need you to send it so you can
call. Oh, man. That so definitely just, takes me back.
Got yeah, nine catalogs and the same thing.
Those are my favorites. Just like plain detective trying to figure out
nice.
The truth of what was being said.
That's awesome. So, Doug, how big was is the agency that you cover then?
Well, okay. So the Highway Patrol has 25 communication centers up and down the state of California. Uh-huh. Largest is LA with 200 dispatchers. And we have about, I think it's around right now, around 1,250 dispatchers around the state. And so that's a lot of training. That's why when I was in charge of the state training program, our job was to get all these new people. Because when you get hired with us, no matter where you get hired in the state, you get hired, in, let's say in San Diego, you are sent immediately to our academy in Sacramento, same academy our officers go to. You get to spend 3 weeks up there with us, and we give you the foundation that you bring back to your center. And you go back and you train at your own center for a while, and then you come back for radio training, and we give you radio training on that stuff. So basically the academy's job was to provide that foundation of policy and why we do things and that kind of stuff. And then you go back and learn the real job one-on-one with a dispatcher at your centers. And that's where it was very difficult for us at the academy because we could pump you up and give you this great stuff about how great it is and send you out, but we have no control over who's going to train you at your comm center. So it could be somebody who hates the job and you wash out quickly. And so it was hard to measure our success levels. And that's why I'm such a big pusher now on training.
Right.
Training is so important. The one-on-one portion of it is so important that it has to be done right. And if you don't, when I took over the academy, we changed everything. I mean, I went in there like a wrecking ball and changed the whole place, the way we do things and say things and what it was our job was. And I think that's where I got this real passion for like training. I want to really like put the message out. The training doesn't have to be bad.
Right.
The person that trained me was great. I mean, I tell this in every class that Sandy Hill from LACC, LA Communications Center, is the one that trained me. She still works there. She's a supervisor up there, but she trained me with 1 year on the job. I came along. I was her first trainee, and she trained me so good, it's led me to where I'm at today. And I always tell her thanks for doing that because she made training engaging. She made it fun. I mean, she made it to where I wanted to learn this stuff. And I thought I did everything as a private investigator. And then I come into this and I'm like, holy cow. I remember going home and just sometimes dreaming and talking in my sleep about 1035. Oh, my God, 1199. And it's like, because it was so, she was so good at the way she did it, it made you want to come back the next day. And that's the way I train nowadays. I train a lot of people for the last 20 years. I've trained people all the time besides hiring them. Because I'm so passionate about training needs to be done a specific way. You don't have to be a dick to somebody to train them. You know?
Yeah. Well, and that's a it's a perfect segue now going into
look at that.
Yeah.
That well wasn't done. Scripted at all, was it? Page turning.
No, I definitely had not scripted you saying dick right before we got into it.
Well, it was DIC. So
hey, well, yeah, that works. Yeah, just like, you know. Just like Vic.
That's right.
So you guys have been doing, you know, this in public safety and everything for such a long time. And then, you know, you kind of break off and you start this company, Showalter & Company.
Right. Training. Yeah, I was doing a lot of training with my own agency, and I still do. Mm-hmm. And I worked for another training provider for about 10 years all across the country doing training. And I got such a passion for the message that I wanted the message to be positive. And I wanted the message to say, training can be a great experience for everybody, including that new person and you and the trainer. Everybody can get this kind of thing. So when I left that other company and started our own company, mm-hmm. that was the thing I wanted to focus on. I didn't want to do a million different types of classes. I wanted to do a set of classes that I thought I had such passion about, like training. Right. We do a CTO class. It's a 2 or 3 day training class. We talk about coming at training from a business perspective. Not the way we've always done it. We always look at it from a business side. Would this work in private industry? If it doesn't, don't do it. So we look at it that way. And I talk about learning methods of how people learn because everybody learns a little bit differently. I mean, I'm a baby boomer. I learned my 1, 2, 3 ABCs by my parents sitting at the table with me going over them. Millennials learned it different ways. They learned it from Sesame Street. They learned it from Conjunction Junction, those things, which made them say learning is fun. Learning is engaging, and I want to have that. So that's why we kind of talk about how do you train somebody? How do you engage that person to want to do these things?
Right.
It's a big thing. And our other classes are on leadership, motivational leadership, because I talk about this right at the beginning of the class. Everybody is a leader. I don't care what rank you are. You could be on 2 weeks, but if you sit there saying, I hate this place, you're leading people in the wrong direction. Everybody has a leadership capability, and they need to know how to use it and harness it and right. make it a positive thing.
Yeah, I mean, people feed off of that. So I say this because I remember being in a supervisor meeting, and actually it was a staff meeting. We were all in there. And somebody had said, you know, you guys can't affect the way, you know, my attitude is, you know, when I'm coming in. And I said, yeah, I can. They're like, what do you mean? I said, if I come into the dispatch center and I'm being a dick and you guys are going to feed off of that and everybody else is going to feel crappy Absolutely. While we're in there. Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm the supervisor in there. If I'm acting that way, it's going to rub off on you. But if I go in there saying, come on, let's do this and, you know, all about it and stuff, motivated, you guys are going to feel the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, it's going to rub off on you.
That's the thing. And a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, I have this really bad habit, and I don't mean to do it, but I have a bad habit of whistling Christmas carols no matter what time of year it is. And sometimes I'll be at my office and people are like, why are you so happy? I'm like, I don't know. I have a great job. It's like I like what I do, and it's right. a fun thing. It shouldn't be negative. I don't come to work and hate my job.
Right.
I mean, my coworker, Katarina, when I'm on the phone with people, she's always like, Doug, you sound like you're on a radio DJ with these folks. Like, they want a gift. I'm like, because I want them to hang up going, damn, I did a good thing. I did something good. I called 911 and got a great thing.
Right.
I don't want them hanging up going, man, those fucking – they're rude. And right. it's like, and I see that. You heard tapes. We all do. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have that. My tapes get played. on, I've had my tapes get released to the media and stuff like that, and I don't sound like that. I sound pretty positive with people. So
right, because that could be the first time that they ever call 911, and yeah. if you're being a jerk to them, they're not going to call it.
And they're going to tell everybody they know, I called the police, and here's what they did to me. So
right.
I try not to have that stuff. So I try to develop these, like almost like a relationship with that caller. Like, hey, you're in a terrible situation, but I'm going to definitely help you get out of that or get you in a better situation, whatever. So I've always felt like that. And I always said, if I stop feeling like that, I will leave. But 27 years in and I'm still going, so I could retire. They told me I could retire last year. But I'm like, I like what I do. I'm going to keep doing what I do because I like that part of it. I like answering calls and I like dealing with the public and mm-hmm. even the public that says, I pay your salary. Okay. Yay, you.
Yeah.
You know what? I pay somebody, taxes thank too. You. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I really do.
So, yeah, it is, you know, that's a real passion of mine. And that's why we started our company and I put the message out there about, I love to talk about. My favorite movie is It's a Wonderful Life. Mm. I just love that movie. It's got such a good message to it because it talks about how one person's impact on everybody is so monumental and you don't even think about it. So when I talk about these things, I said, what if that was the day you didn't answer that 191 call? What's that? That's the day you let it ring by. We could have affected that person's life. I think of us sometimes as a signpost. Like, we're going to direct you in the right direction or we're going to direct you in the wrong direction.
Right.
And I try to instill that in people saying, look at the amount of people you touch every single day on 911 and you don't realize the impact you've had. I'll give you a quick one. A friend of mine called me and said, Doug, are you friends on this one Facebook page? Which I was not because there's so many of them. And she goes, go to this Facebook page and check this thing out. And I'm like, all right. So I go look at this Facebook page and there's an update from somebody who said, you know, several years ago, I was going to quit dispatch. I'd just been burned out or whatever. And I went to a class with Doug and he changed me and he turned me around. He probably doesn't even know it. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I immediately friended this person,
right.
you
know, yeah.
saying, oh, my God,
hello,
I'm Doug.
Friend.
Yeah. And she goes, you know, I just never said anything to you. I didn't know what your last name was. I didn't. But I remember taking the class with you and you were so positive and so influential that I stayed on. And now I'm a trainer and all these things. And I'm like, that's what it is. That's what it's about, doing that kind of thing. And that's why when we do these classes and people come up and say, damn, you're so positive and you're so energetic, whatever. It's like, that's what it's about. Touching that one person.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole, that's our biggest push is getting the message out that you don't have to be a jerk in this business. I don't want you to be.
Right. Damn, man, I had four questions that I was going to ask you. How is it different and unique? What are some of the classes you offer, and where will you be next? Actually, that one I'm getting to, but the other ones, those two main ones, I didn't even have to ask
that.
You.
See that? Well, because we do like basically our core classes are we do CTO, which is a 2 or 3 day CTO class, training for trainers.
Uh-huh.
We do a motivational leadership course, which is about 8 hours. We do a expecting the unexpected, which is a passion of mine because it covers everything from active shooters to dog attacks to sinking vehicles, which sinking vehicles has been a big passion of mine for years. Anybody that knows me, I have done so much research on it and met with so many people about it because you ask dispatchers, what if you get somebody who tells you I'm in the water, my car's sinking, what do I do? And I've got some methods on how to get people out of these cars, but you got to go quickly. And playing the tapes that I have of people that actually drown in these things, mm-hmm. it's a passion. So that's a big class of mine too. So like I said, I don't want to have a million different classes. I want to have this group of classes that I know are good.
Yeah. Right.
And we'll customize them. Like mm-hmm. if there's particular topics or if you want it to be heavier on one side, you can do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what makes us different. And that's why we just keep it small so that we can offer great classes and we're able to customize them for the agencies, departments, if they want more of one topic or less sinking vehicles. I personally thought when he came up with that class that the class was really heavy on sinking vehicles or expecting the unexpected rather. I thought it was heavy on sinking vehicles. I'm like, that takes up a lot of time in that class.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't until he taught it a couple times that everybody's like, oh my God, that's so great. Oh, there's so much information. I didn't know any of that. And I was like, it's good. I enjoy that they've told us that that's what they like. And yeah.
So that's awesome.
It really works because I've done so much research on the classes. I don't just put on a class. I researched the hell out of them and then put on the class.
Right.
And we just had somebody ask us today, do you guys do like an afternoon type class? I said, absolutely. Yeah. I worked swings for many years. Not graveyard. I didn't like it. But I did work graveyard, but I just didn't like it. But
this patch is not a
9-to-5
job.
Yeah. So we told him, yeah, we'll do afternoon classes late. He wanted to do like 7 to 10 or something. And I'm like, sweet, I'll do it. No problem. I mean, it's
that's pretty cool.
I understand dispatch. I understand that they don't work the same hours of an office.
Right.
I mean, so they have to do these things. So, I mean, I've done my share of graveyard. And back when I did graveyard, we had Jolt Cola.
Yeah. Which was, oh, my God. I remember Jolt Cola.
Yes. We were shaky after a little while.
I was like 93, 94.
Yes, it was back in the days of when I did Real Stories of the Highway Patrol.
Yeah, dude.
I'm going to be in a Surge.
Oh, Surge was another
good
one.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah.
I was very excited when we found it last year. And then you can buy it on Amazon.
Oh, that's just like Crystal Pepsi, how came back. I saw that at a gas station on one of my travels. I thought, I just found a unicorn. I took,
took did a,
I didn't. I did not because I remembered how bad it was.
It was bad. It was horrible, but it was Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah,
right.
Just crystal meth. So.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, one of the reasons I said damn earlier is because I can tell, I can hear and even feel the passion with you talking about it, the both of you. So that's why I had to say something where I didn't even have to ask you these questions because you answered them right off the bat. And that's what's amazing about all of this and what you guys are doing. So this is awesome. Going into the wrap up of this episode, where will you be next and your social media? How do people find you?
So we will be in Maryland in September, from September 12th, 13th, and 14th.
Like the next day.
The next
day. Oh, man.
16th, 17th, and 18th of September. So that's the most recent we have coming up. And then Doug can talk social media.
Yeah, but we are... We are heavy on social media. I love Facebook and Facebook. It's facebook.com/Showalter Company. Nothing in between. They're just Showalter Company and you'll get right to us. Our Instagram is the same thing. Showalter Company. All no spaces in between. They're just Showalter Company. We have a web page now, which is www.showaltercompany.com. It's got all the information on there. We absolutely, when people send us requests for classes or information, whatever, we send them a ton of stuff. We've got so many requests now from this conference that we're sending out so much information. We have a lot of information to send out to people so they can make a decision on what do they want to do. So we're really heavy on social media. I really enjoy putting up current stuff on social media. I don't put up anything on our Facebook account or Instagram account that's like slamming to dispatch or the public or whatever because I do it. And I'm not going to slam my own business. So I put up positive stuff or funny stuff or things that matter. So I always tell people check it out. And I see a lot of our stuff is shared all over the place, which is great.
Right.
I mean, I like that kind of stuff. So it's nice to have like a place where you can go and see something positive about our job and what we do. And I put up tons of pictures because we're all over the darn place. So I put up a lot of pictures. So heavy on social media. Please join us up on our social media up there.
Yeah, and if you send us an email, we're at the conference right now.
Right.
Even if it's a quick, hey, I got your email, and we'll get to it by the end of the week or something. Because I just don't want people to feel like we don't care. We do care. And that's what's important to me, that people know that, hey, your email is important to me. We are busy, but I will, as soon as I have a chance, I will send it to you. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for being on this episode. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this was excellent. We were going to go 30 minutes, and we went... way past that.
Way over that.
Yeah.
This will be a lot of editing going on here.
This is good. This was an excellent episode. So again, thank you both very much for being on.
Now that I had to point out how much older I am than both of you. So.
Can I just
want to
sit in the corner and not say anything?
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Yeah,
thank
for you. Sure. Yeah, so for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, if you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. This is going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com.
You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @911podcast. This episode is sponsored by Showalter & Company and supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. This episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.